Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
started to burn many too many things we found. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman joining you again for another hour at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show on PRN. Thank you, crew in New York. Jesse and everybody for getting us on the show. We're going to talk today about a loathsome creature, almost as loathsome as the creep in the White House. That would be too much of a stretch, but this guy is actually in Trump's league, the guy we're going to talk about. His name is Jeffrey Epstein. Many of you have read about him. Is the serial child molester. Sex trafficker, guy who wanted to foster a race of his own children, apparently, about as psychotic and sick and screwed up a guy as you can ever imagine. And no, it's not good for the Jews. I'm going to talk with Nick Bryant. Nick, you with us?
I'm with you. Great to be with you.
Great. And Bob Fitrakis may be joining us at some point. Bob, you on the phone yet? Okay, make sure when Bob gets on that he is announced. My co-conspirator, who has a lot of inside information on Jeffrey Epstein. I do want to start the show, Nick, if you'll have a little patience with me. I am in Columbus, Ohio, and I've got to say, and I'm just going to let this out here, that Donald Trump is loathsome, a cretin, and moron, and jerk, and mobster, and low-life scumbag that he is. He never.
How do you really feel about Donald Trump, Harvey?
Yeah. Well, I feel about him the same as about half the country. Unfortunately, not enough feel about him the way I do. And we're gonna have to talk about I think the only way that he's gonna leave office is in a general strike. And we're going to have to talk about the long-term view of that. Let's talk about it now for a minute or two. I don't think Donald Trump will leave office.
Come on, Harvey.
Voluntarily. Oh, Bob, you're with us. Okay, Bob Fitrakis, you're on with Nick Bryant and me. Glad to have you both. We're going to delve into Jeffrey Epstein in a few moments. And I know that I'm going to say this up front because I know that once we get into this, low-life scumbag piece of garbage who's in prison now, Jeffrey Epstein. We need to deal with the low-life scumbag piece of garbage that's in the White House and who should be in a cell with Jeffrey Epstein. I think that would be, you got a mushroom and an egg there, and I won't elaborate, but Bob, you can explain as we go along. But the bottom line is, I don't think that Donald Trump will leave office voluntarily. No matter what the vote count in November, he knows a year from November. Thankfully, we have a year. That's the only good news, is we have a full year to deal with this guy. I don't think his popularity is going to go up, but we have to face the reality that a year from November, when the votes come in, no matter what the vote count says, Donald Trump will not accept it. And there will be chaos on Election Day. And Bob, you and I have written many volumes about this. There will be rigged voting machines. There will be lost paper ballots. There will be long lines. And God forbid one of Trump's shooters should show up at one of these long lines. There will be people stripped from the voter rolls. There will be flipping of the vote counts. And then, of course, the perennial slave-based backup, the Electoral College. And Donald Trump will get up in front of the American public and the world and say that there were millions of miscreant Mexicans who swam across the river Rio Grande on election day to illegally vote in all 50 states. And no matter what the official vote count, he will say that he was the rightful winner. And he'll take it to the Supreme Court, excuse me, where he could win 5-4. So I think that we actually have to prepare for this reality. And I think ultimately, and, you know, thinking in the big picture and the long term, the only thing that will really reliably get Donald Trump out of the White House will be a general strike. I don't see anything else. And Bob, you've been deep in the weeds of syndicalism for many, many years. What do you think about that concept?
Well, the fact that we're discussing it is the shocking part, that it's actually conceivable that with Trump's ego that, you know, he may not leave. You know, he's mentioning of soldiers and, you know, cops and bikers. And also these 3% militiamen in places like Ohio that show up heavily armed at Trump rallies to protect a small amount of Trump supporters from people that are unarmed and exercising their First Amendment rights to counter-protest is setting the stage where that's a possibility.
Well, you know, the thing about Trump that's unique is that he is the first candidate for president who, if he loses, is virtually certain to go to prison. Or to Moscow, one or the other. Although, if he's no longer president, I don't know what use his current mob boss, Vladimir Putin, will have for him. But Trump knows pretty clearly, I mean, I don't think there's much doubt, that if he is a private citizen, he's going to be indicted at least by the state of New York, and if there's a Democratic president, by a new attorney general. Nick, you want to weigh in on that?
No, I'm here to talk about Jeffrey Epstein, but keep going.
All right, well, we'll get to Jeffrey Epstein in a minute then. So that's something I want to say. I also want to echo, I've said this before, there's only one electoral force that's going to defeat Donald Trump in the upcoming election, assuming we have it, in November 2020, and that's the millennials. I just read another piece by my buddy Norman Solomon about how Nancy Pelosi has complete contempt and actually fear, I think, for these four women in the Congress. And it's basically she's looking at her own mortality. These four women, it's, of course, significant that they're women and they're of color, and not all of them are Christians. But it's also most important that they're young. And the millennial generation is 86 million of people born between the late, early 80s and the early 2000s. And it's a bigger generation than the baby boom. And as far as I'm concerned as a historian, and you can read all about this in my new book, The People's Spiral of U.S. History, the baby boomers, those of us who came of age in the 60s, we really transformed the culture. We killed the old Puritan, whatever, but we were unable to end the empire, and or to win economic justice, and that's or ecological protection, and that's going to have to be the millennials who do that. Bob, you want to chime in on that before we get to Jeffrey Epstein?
Oh no, there's clearly a huge divide within the party themselves, and I think the New York Times did a very good story on the Democratic Socialists of America convention, because again, that's the so-called left wing of the possible, but they're having a hard time selling. And the DSA is no longer, you know, your grandfather's DSA. There's a ton of millennials in that organization, many who, you know, won't vote for centrists or people with neoconservative foreign policy. So again, if you're going to beat Trump, yeah, you've got to, in some ways, have a united party. And at this point, we're not seeing that.
Right, and God help us if the nominee is Joe Biden. I mean, this guy, you know, he belongs in a home. It's not that he's old. I mean, I don't think he's much older than Bernie, or they're about the same age, but Joe Biden is really feeble. I mean, he can barely put a sentence together. Let's just hope that there's time to get him off the ticket and get somebody who can walk and chew gum, even separately, let alone together. All right, let's talk now. I know, Nick Bryant, you've come to talk to us about Jeffrey Epstein. We are, Bob and I, Bob Fitrakis and I, are both in Columbus, Ohio, home of Leslie Wexner, and I guess some of Jeffrey Epstein's many mansions. Can you tell us what kind of hold Jeffrey Epstein had on Leslie Wexner, the multi-billionaire founder of Unlimited and apparently Jeffrey Epstein's basic sugar daddy? What was the deal between these two guys?
Well, that's difficult to pin down with an absolute certainty, but it's very obvious Wexner has this squeaky clean persona that he's cultivated, as billionaires often do. But it's obvious that he's not as squeaky clean as he'd like us to believe that he is.
So what was the deal with him and Jeffrey Epstein?
We don't really know yet with certainty. I mean, there's a lot of conjecture out there, but Wexner's name, Alfredo Rodriguez, was Epstein's house manager, and he circled people in the Black Book. I published the Black Book some years ago on Gawker, and he circled people in the Black Book that had been, in one way or another, criminally cahoots with Jeffrey Epstein, and the FBI labeled them material witnesses. And Leslie Wexner's name is circled in the Black Book, as is Donald Trump's. So the house manager obviously felt or saw that something they had done was in line with Jeffrey Epstein's criminal enterprises.
All right, so what do you want? Let me put it in your ballpark here, pitch you a softball. What do you want to tell us about Jeffrey Epstein?
Well, there's a lot of inexplicable things about Jeffrey Epstein. That's the thing, is he had a job at Dalton. He dropped out of college. He had a job at Dalton. And then he hooked up with Steve Hoffenberg, who at that point had pulled off the largest Ponzi scheme of all time. And Hoffenberg has said that Epstein also was in on that Ponzi scheme. It's difficult to know. But then in the mid-80s, Epstein hooked up with Wexner. And at that point, his fortune started to soar. And he also, around that time, hooked up with Ghislaine Maxwell, who was the daughter of former spy and disgraced entrepreneur Maxwell, and ultimately, so Epstein had the money of Les Wexner, and he had the social connection of Ghislaine Maxwell, and ultimately, he started his little pandering network, which actually became quite large. He was flying girls from around the country. He had, in the Black Book, I mean, he's got girls all over the country, and actually he's got girls in London, and he's got girls in Paris. And then there's very sordid allegations, which I think are probably true, that he was buying girls in Eastern Europe. So suddenly you've got this guy who was working class, and then he became very affluent, and he started molesting young girls and pandering them to the rich and powerful who were also molesting them. And he got away with that for a very long time. And the Palm Beach Police Department did an investigation into Epstein, one of his 14-year-old victims. And in the news, it said that his youngest victim was 14. That's not true. His youngest victim was actually 12. The youngest victim that we know of was 12. The Palm Beach Police Department was contacted by a very concerned foster mother, stepmother, and the stepmother told the police that her daughter had been molested by Jeffrey Epstein. And they went about it, the Palm Beach Police Department. I mean, here's a very horrific allegation against someone who's very wealthy and is enmeshed in high society. So they went about the investigation very tenaciously, but also very gingerly. And it took them about 11 months. And they ultimately put together the statements of five underage victims who had been molested by Epstein. And there was like 12 other corroborating witnesses who corroborated their stories. And they wanted to outright indict Epstein on five counts of child abuse. And suddenly the state took over that case and called a grand jury. Now, I don't know if your listeners are familiar with a grand jury, but a grand jury is very easy to corrupt because in a grand jury, a special prosecutor is chosen. And in this place, the state of Florida, his name was Bob Kirshner, and he was a special prosecutor. And grand jurors are just simply citizens that have been summoned to jury duty, and then they've been funneled to a grand jury. So ultimately, the special prosecutor of a grand jury presents evidence to grand jurors, and it's generally the evidence, and he gets to choose all the evidence that's presented to the grand jurors. So if he wants an indictment, he can get an indictment. If he doesn't want an indictment, he won't get an indictment. And actually, a pretty famous New York judge said that special prosecutors have so much power over grand jurors that they can get them to indict a ham sandwich, which I think is true, or certainly even Mother Teresa. But ultimately, what happened with that grand jury is that it didn't indict Jeffrey Epstein on any counts of child abuse, none. It indicted him on one.
What year was it? What year was it?
That was in the original investigation started in 2006, and this was and it's like went into 2006. The original investigation started 2005, and this went into like 2006, 2007. So,
and Bob Patrakis, who's on the line with us, was following Les Wexner's career back then. And Bob, did you run into any of this stuff when you were investigating Wexner? Oh, maybe Bob's not there anymore. Okay, so go ahead.
So ultimately what happened is the Palm Beach police chief, his name is Michael Ryder, he put up, I mean, he just really went apoplectic. I mean, he was very, very upset by that grand jury, and he really was quite vocal, and he took a tremendous amount of heat. I mean, there were people following him around, and he was he had been a distinguished law enforcement officer for many years. And he had taken a tremendous amount of heat from the people that Jeffrey Epstein hired. And actually, the Palm Beach Police Department had once they decided that they were going to dig into Jeffrey Epstein. So, but he wouldn't back down. And then ultimately, the feds came in. Now, the feds had a list of approximately 35 to 40 underage victims that Epstein had molested. And they did not act upon that information. And actually, they did not indict Epstein. Ultimately, what happened there was the feds got Epstein to plead guilty to one count of pandering a minor and one count of pandering an adult. And he was looking at 20 years with those two indictments. But he pled to 18 months, and he served 13 months in a county jail. So the feds really came in, and that's when, and that was our former labor secretary, Acosta.
Yeah, but wasn't he allowed to be at home during that?
No,
that
he
period?
Was. Yeah, it was a joke. I mean, he was allowed to go out during the day. He kind of had his little cell turned into a suite. I mean, it was, I mean, his punishment was a complete joke.
So why would he have been given such privileges?
Well, I wrote a book called The Franklin Scandal, and it was basically the same thing. It was, in this case, there were two pedophilic pimps that were flying children from coast to coast and pandering them to the rich and powerful. And it was covered up by, actually, it was a much bigger network than Epstein's network, and it took three grand juries to cover that network up. But ultimately, Epstein is pandering children to some of the most powerful people in the world, some of the richest people in the world, and that's why he was protected. I mean, it's that simple. That's why he was protected.
So the people to whom he was pandering young girls, now, was this a business?
He was quite fond of molesting these girls, so I guess it was a vocation for him. I don't know if he was repatriated with money when he pandered these young girls. We just don't know.
He must have been selling these girls and or their services to the rich people, right?
I mean, that's conceivable, or he was doing them favors. But here's the thing with Epstein. When the Palm Beach Police Department executed the search warrant in Epstein's home, Epstein had time. Epstein was given a heads up on it, but he didn't get, there was some stuff in the house, like there were some hidden cameras that the Palm Beach Police Department found. And also, there has also been innuendo about cameras in his other domiciles. Like on his island and in his New York home. And actually, when the safe was opened, it had DVDs of girls, and then it had a DVD of Girl A, and then a DVD of Mr. A or whatever. So it's pretty obvious that Epstein was blackmailing people. And the thing about it is, when you get into blackmailing powerful people, when you get into blackmailing like billionaires and other powerful people that have access to thugs and murderers, there's no way that Jeffrey Epstein did that by himself. I mean, if Jeffrey Epstein tried to blackmail someone that was rich and powerful and amoral, which I think if you're molesting children, you're probably amoral. If Jeffrey Epstein was doing that, there's no way that these guys wouldn't have just often. And so Jeffrey Epstein was obviously protected by a very, very powerful organization, so that these rich guys knew that, you know, if they messed with Jeffrey Epstein, then bad things were going to happen to them. And that's the only way it can work, is it, the two pedophilic pimps I wrote about in the Franklin scandal, that was also a blackmail enterprise. There was a house in Washington, D.C. that was fitted with cameras, and I mean I really proved this in the book. And the guy who owned the house was one of the pedophilic pimps, but he's also a CIA asset. And
what
was actually,
wait a minute, Bob Fetrakis, are you still on the line?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Oh, now hello. I can hear you. Have you been listening to this?
Yeah, sure.
So I'm gonna interview. Interrupt for a minute, Nick. And Bob, he just said, can you repeat this? This guy was a CIA asset working with,
yes,
Jeffrey Epstein, moving children around like inventory? This was a CIA operation?
One of the pedophilic pimps in the Franklin scandal was a CIA asset. And now it's coming out. Vicki Ward was the first, fired the first salvo. According to Acosta, he was told to back away from the Epstein case because Epstein was "quote unquote" intelligence. So,
God.
and our intelligence, Bob.
Let me get Bob Fetrakis in on this, because Bob's an expert on this kind of stuff. The CIA was involved with Jeffrey Epstein's trafficking of young girls. Bob Fetrakis.
Well, you know, there's numerous connections between Epstein and the intelligence community, as there was with Wexner and Wexner's mentor as well, Max Fisher. So, yeah, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me at all, right? Remember that Epstein first appears, comes to the notice of law enforcement in Ohio, the Franklin County Sheriff, the late Earl Smith, David Sturtz, the Inspector General, over the building of New Albany and the finances, which involved the murder, mob-style murder of Arthur Shapiro. So you've got that. You've also got the situation where when Epstein was reported to be in charge of logistics for Wexner and helping out with the Limited, is they brought Southern Air Transport, formerly Air America, to Columbus, Ohio, on tax money from the state and tax credit, a package that amounted to $25 million. So you brought the most notorious drug and arms-running airline, a proprietary of the CIA, to Columbus, Ohio, to Rickenbacker Airfield. So, yeah, it's assumed that Epstein was an asset of the CIA. And it would also, there was investigations into blackmail. He was thought to be blackmailing Wexner. And Wexner just admitted yesterday, we published this in the Free Press on Monday, but he admitted it to the Dispatch, and he sent out a letter saying Epstein was ripping him off. But it was thought that he also was blackmailing people. Remember that Wexner also did the propaganda for the war in Iraq. It was done through the Wexner Foundation on how to sell the war in Iraq when Epstein was heavily involved with the Wexner Foundation.
My God. What possible use, let me ask you this, Nick, what possible use did the CIA have for a pedophile a trafficking operation? Why would the CIA want to have a stake in that?
I'm not talking. I'm talking about some very dark corner of the CIA or of intelligence that's perpetrating something like this. And blackmail has always been the currency of intelligence operations and intelligence agencies. I mean, Americans are very, very naive about blackmail in the United States and blackmail of our politicians. That's what just I've written two books on sexual blackmail in the United States, and actually both I connected both books to the CIA, and I'm working on a third book right now. That's just what some dark corner of the CIA does, is blackmail people. And
I'm sure you're familiar with the Covenant House as well. It came out that, you know, runaway young boys that were being, you know, tended to by a Catholic priest, they used them to set up and blackmail diplomats in Central America to get support for U.S. policy during the Cold War.
Yeah,
the Cold War, the ends justified the means, unfortunately, but you would think that that type of behavior would have stopped, that type of criminal enterprise would have stopped after the Cold War, but it just kept rolling, unfortunately.
We're talking. Go ahead.
If you look at how protected Jeffrey Epstein was, that the Palm Beach Police Department had the statements of five girls, and then the corroborating statements of 12 witnesses, and the feds had anywhere from 35 to 40 victims, and Epstein skated on that, more or less. He just skated. I mean, obviously, some very powerful people were protecting Jeffrey Epstein.
Bob?
Yeah.
Was obviously, one of them was Les Wexner.
Well, that was, these things, again, called honey traps. where you're using sex. And there's a long history of this. Think about the, you know, the Park scandal with the South Koreans, where they were using, you know, granted adults, but they were doing horizontal, you know, sex lobbying with the U.S. Congress. That's in the 444-page Frazier Report. Also, if you look at the Kerry Brown Senate report on BCCI, they used, they set up a member of the royal family in the United Arab Emirates with prepubescent girls in exchange for him fronting for the Bank of Credit and Commerce International. So, I mean, this stuff is all over the public record.
God, but there's a tremendous amount of denial about it. Americans don't want to know this. Americans would rather be just stick their heads in the sand like an ostrich. And of course, the mainstream media isn't going to report it because I believe that there are many people that are compromised in the mainstream media. So ultimately, this is a facet of our politics that plays an integral role in our politics, sexual blackmail, that Americans don't have a clue about. I was pitching an Epstein story to a magazine about 2 weeks ago, and the editor-in-chief of that magazine didn't think that there was political sexual blackmail. I mean, that's how out to lunch the media is. And a lot of time the media doesn't need to be co-opted. They just view the world through this very, very censored paradigm.
Unbelievable. Well, I do want to slip in here my very favorite CIA story of sexual blackmail, which has to do with Sukarno. I'm sure both of you guys know the story. Sukarno was the nationalist macho man, vaguely leftist prime minister of Indonesia. And the CIA filmed him at a sex orgy, and they brought the tape to him and said that he should resign or else they're going to spread the tape. And they left him a copy of the tape, and he spread it all over Indonesia himself to enhance his macho image. But I guess that didn't involve 12-year-old girls. So, you know, this is another realm here. My God. Okay, so just when you think you've heard it all. I assume, and Bob, you would know this, but Nick, you can chime in, please. Reading the story about Les Wexner on the front page of the New York Times a few days ago, they didn't say this, but you could only assume that Jeffrey Epstein was blackmailing Les Wexner. Why else would a guy with no college, or barely an education, no apparent great talents, have this in with Les Wexner? Jeff, Nick, do you want to comment, and then Bob?
Well, obviously, there was something going on between Jeffrey Epstein and Les Wexner. We don't know for sure that it's blackmail. I mean, there's a lot of conjecture on that, as I said earlier. But Les Wexner isn't the squeaky clean billionaire that I think he's made himself out to be. He has a history of organized crime associations. And I think if someone goes underneath the surface of Les Wexner, they're going to find some very, very ugly realities.
Well, Bob Petrakis has done just that. Bob, you have a piece in the Free Press and at freepress.org. Do you want to talk a bit about how, I mean, this is going to come out sooner or later. I mean, Les has done an amazing job of staying under the radar screen. Bob, what do you see in your crystal ball future here for Les Wexner?
Well, Wexner's approach, and he used this when Epstein was, you know, under investigation in Florida, is he says, you know, he now admits that Epstein stole vast fortunes from him. And in my article, when Epstein first came to my attention, the Inspector General's office, for whatever reason, called Epstein a boyfriend, Wexner's boyfriend. And again, they also used to call him Les's Gale Friday. Is he endeared himself? Wexner had been real reclusive, not seeking much publicity. And suddenly, you know, there was vast parties, and, you know, Epstein was holding court out in New Albany. So it was thought that he had some hope. I mean, Wexner has now admitted that he gave Jeffrey Epstein durable power attorney over his finances. So the question is, you know, the relationship, you know, seemed to sorrow by, you know, somewhat after Wexner got married, but, you know, they really didn't have a breakup until the indictments in Florida.
But that wasn't the end of it, though. I mean, they continued to have...
No, and it went on. Financial interchanges went on at least to 2011.
Yes.
And then the indictments were in 2008.
Wexner has said that he completely disengaged from Jeffrey Epstein after Epstein was indicted for child sexual abuse. But that's not true, because Wexner and Epstein have had financial arrangements, overt financial arrangements, until at least, as Bob said, 2011. So Wexner's lying about that. And why would someone lie about that? Obviously, he has something to hide.
My God, I mean, this is really mind-boggling. Where and how, Nick, does Donald Trump fit into the picture with Jeffrey Epstein?
Well, Donald Trump's name is also circled in the Black Book. And I wrote an article. It's kind of funny. I had the Black Book, and I had all these passenger manifests, and no one in New York would publish the article. I mean, I just found it mind-boggling, and I was ultimately able to sell it to Gawker.
To who?
And to Gawker, the former site Gawker. And
G-A-W-K-E-R,
Trump said through a spokesman that he had never been to Epstein's home. Now, I have absolute proof that Trump has been to Epstein's home, so... via his spokesman, he lied in that article. Now, Trump lies quite a bit, so that doesn't shock him, but he definitely lied in that article.
And is there evidence of any financial dealings between Epstein and Trump?
Yeah, well, Nigel Rosser, who writes for the Evening Standard and thought to be a confidant of the Queen, yeah, you got to recall that Epstein actually was at the one of the Queen's birthday parties and was very close to Prince Andrew, and went on 5 excursions with Prince Andrew and Ms. Maxwell, his lady. So Trump is on tape, right, the 92 tape, where they're with the cheerleaders, and also the report a few years later of, you know, the... models showing up for a party, and the only two males there were Epstein and Trump. Also, the report of the 13-year-old girl that she was raped by Trump at Epstein's, you know, mansion in New York.
Man. God. You know. Okay.
And you also had the faint comment from Trump saying that him and Epstein both liked beautiful women, but Epstein liked him on the young side.
Yeah, our leaders have nothing on Caligula, unfortunately.
I mean, mind-boggling. Okay, so what's going to Nick, what happened? First of all, Nick, give us your books and how people can get a hold of you, please.
The book that I wrote about an interstate pedophile network is called the Franklin Scandal, a story of child abuse and betrayal. And it's, you can get it on the internet. My website is franklinscandal.com. You can buy copies there. You can buy copies on Amazon. But yeah, it's available.
Why Franklin Scandal? Where does the title come from?
The Franklin Scandal, that particular pedophilic pimp ran a credit union called the Franklin Credit Union. And he used that credit union for a front for his pedophile network. And his pedophile network was much bigger than Epstein's pedophile network. And he also pandered to the rich and powerful, especially his little boys instead of little girls. And he apparently pandered to Republicans. So I think that's really where the partisan demarcation is, that our Republican politicians are fond of little boys and our Democratic politicians are fond of little girls.
Well, but of course, anyway, everybody knows that.
But anyway, so he ultimately, there was two grand juries in Nebraska, and he was not indicted by those grand juries for sexual abuse. He was indicted for stealing money from the Franklin Credit Union. But it's amazing. I mean, there were a number of kids that came forward, and the FBI put a tremendous amount of pressure on all those kids to recant their accounts of abuse. But two of those kids refused to recant their accounts of abuse. And one was Alicia Owen, and she was looking at, she was indicted on 8 counts of perjury, and she was looking at 160 years. And she still refused to recant her accounts of abuse. She said, "I was abused by these people, and there's no way I'm going to recant that." So she was sentenced to between 9 and 15 years for perjury, and she spent nearly 2 years in solitary confinement. And what's amazing about that is she's turned into a very productive member of society, and she's gone on to have a very good life. Whereas the kids that recanted ended up as drug addicts, and some of them are dead, and some of them are still living that type of an existence.
Why would the Federal Bureau of Investigation put pressure on abused children to recant their testimony?
Because they were protecting very powerful people. They were also protecting a CIA blackmail operation. It was imperative that those dominoes didn't start falling in Omaha. If those dominoes had started falling in Omaha, they would have fallen all the way to Washington, D.C. So consequently, it was imperative that the FBI step in and get those kids to recant. Now, on the Washington, D.C. side, where you had the CIA asset with the house that was wired for audiovisual blackmail, there was also a grand jury that didn't indict him. And the Secret Service played the heavy, because the people that knew what he was up to were threatened by the Secret Service. I capture all this in the Franklin Scandal, and also Confessions of a DC Madam, The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail. So ultimately, we have Epstein, I think, in a very similar position. Why he was taken down? The Southern District of New York has been traditionally very autonomous, and they've got a reputation for being cowboys. So they acted on this. I believe that our current Attorney General, William Barr, is very corrupt, and I don't see him acting on this, although it's difficult to know. But the Miami Herald articles that kept getting pumped out about Jeffrey Epstein, I mean, ultimately did pierce the zeitgeist of America and caused a tremendous amount of collective outrage.
Bob?
And Barr's father was involved with Dalton and knew Jeff Epstein when he was without degrees and teaching, you know, at the private prep school.
Jeez. So do you think that Barr's father was compromised in this sex trafficking ring, Bob Sturkus?
Well, it was, at that point, there weren't any real accusations of Epstein other than, you know, he was the hip teacher that hung out at an occasional party. But, again, I mean, Barr's father goes back very far with Jeff Epstein in terms of knowing him early on.
So, Nick, if you were the insurance company that had a life insurance policy on Jeff Epstein, what would you guess the current actuarial reality would be for this guy?
I would be actually quite nervous. In the Franklin scandal, there were two pedophilic pimps. One committed suicide. I mean, his funds all dried up, and I think that he felt like suicide was the only way out, and he was probably told that suicide was the only way out. Now, the other one, Lawrence King, who embezzled all that money from the Franklin Credit Union, he kept his mouth shut and did 10 years for embezzlement. And then he got out and he was taken care of. He's been taken care of very well since he was released from prison. So I think the deal with him was, Larry, you've done some good work for us. If you keep your mouth shut, you're going to have to do some prison, but then we'll take care of you. But Epstein, with these charges against Epstein, I think that he's going to be in prison for the duration. So it's a very different look than the look with the Franklin scandal. So they're not analogous that way. So I think with Jeffrey Epstein, the only thing I can think of is that his family will be able to keep his vast fortune. And that would be the deal that he would make to keep his mouth shut. But I don't really foresee him talking. He would have, if he started to talk, there would be just so many powerful guys going down. And I don't think that whoever Jeffrey Epstein was blackmailing these people for, I just don't think that they would allow that to happen.
I can't imagine. Well, if you were, all right, I'll ask Bob and then you, Nick. If you were a betting man, who has a greater life expectancy at this point in time, Michael Cohen or Jeffrey Epstein? Bob, what's your guess?
Michael Cohen. I think if Epstein gets in, well, Epstein has, you know, is connected to, you know, one of the most despicable scandals in history. It's publicly known. And the people, you know, look, I mean, Bill Clinton was on the Lolita Express. I mean, the name itself should tell you to, you know, stay off. I mean, he visited Orgy Island. Another, you know, red flag is that, you know, you've got Donald Trump, you've got Bill Clinton, you got Bill Richardson. I mean, the people that are involved.
Barack and actually the presidents of other countries like Spain, and I mean, it was definitely an international network.
All right, yeah, so
I
guess,
see Jeffrey Epstein as the next Mayflower Madam.
Well, what's your guess, Nick? Who lives longer, Michael Cohen or Jeffrey Epstein?
I think Michael Cohen definitely lives longer. I just can't see. Jeffrey Epstein is too used to his creature comforts. He's lived this unbelievable life for a very long time. And I just don't see him being able to cope with the brutal realities of prison. And plus, if you're a pedophile in prison, that's very, very hard time. I mean, you have to be segregated from the general population or else that's pretty much the end of you. So I definitely don't see Jeffrey Epstein going the distance on this one.
God, I'm going to have to take a shower after this show. Really, mind-boggling. Nick, what else do you want to tell us about Jeffrey Epstein? And you got to understand, Bob Petrakis has a tremendous knowledge of this kind of stuff. So
what
else
do
you want to throw
out
there?
Bob is very edified about this. That's about it. I mean, we've pretty much covered all the bases as far as Jeffrey Epstein goes.
Do you think this is going to somehow affect or get deeper into the Trump administration, the Trump mystique?
It definitely could, but that's going to be up to Jeffrey Epstein, whether he's going to talk or not. But I do believe that if Jeffrey Epstein starts to talk, he will either hang himself or be killed by an inmate or something highly negative will befall Jeffrey Epstein if he starts to talk. So I just don't see him incriminating his rich and powerful friends, especially with our present Attorney General William Barr. I mean, I could be wrong, and maybe the Southern District of New York has decided to take this on, and they're fighting Barr. Maybe they did this just kind of impromptu. I mean, it's really difficult to know at this point the machinations that are going on right now.
God, Bob, do you think?
Well, Trump was included in Epstein's circle. If you go back in Nigel Rosser's article, where really he's trying to warn Prince Andrew, you know, not to hang out with Epstein. But, you know, they were at Mar-a-Lago. They were at, you know, Trump resorts. I mean, they were very close. You know, Rosser, you know, includes Trump as one of the cronies of Epstein in that period around 2003.
And then Trump is circled in Epstein's black book. So according to the FBI, that would make him potentially a material witness to Jeffrey Epstein's crimes.
Lots of luck with that one. Don't the state governments get, well, obviously the state intervened in Florida. What about the state of New York? Could the attorney general of the state of New York, who's not under Bill Barr's thumb, get involved in this, Nick?
I mean, they could. But it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. According to Acosta, he was told to back away from Epstein because Epstein was intelligent. So there's a lot of things there's a lot of variables right now that are completely unknown. And hopefully these variables will come to light if Epstein doesn't kill himself. But
or get killed.
And yeah, Governor Cuomo had ties to Epstein as well.
Oh my God, really? Was he in the black book?
The questions? What I mean, there was questions of whether it was money, you know, the connections, or whether he just knew him because he was rich. I mean, for God's sake, you know, the current man running for Prime Minister of Israel and was in business relations and very close to Jeff Epstein as well. It's emerged as a campaign issue.
Oh my God.
It's pretty ugly. It's very, very ugly.
Well, I'm going to imagine that Jeff Epstein's not going to live very long. I mean, Michael Cohen has pretty much, you know, shot his wad. At least as best we can tell, that was a smart thing to do. I don't know that they would ever let. I mean, if this is as deep as it sounds, I can't imagine them letting Jeffrey Epstein live long enough to start really spilling the beans.
Well, one chance at living a long life is the question of how much he taped and recorded, and there were reports and speculation that some of that or on his island, Orgy Island, and that he may have set up a way to release that information if something happens to him.
Nick, have you heard anything like that?
I have. I've heard innuendo in that area, but I don't know. I mean, there's so much. There's so many people talking now, bringing up stuff. I'm just trying to sift through it and find the gold nuggets. And it's difficult to know. I mean, I've been following Jeffrey Epstein for 9 years, 8 or 9 years. And I never thought that I would see him in federal prison. So I'm very happy about that. He destroyed a lot of kids, and nothing destroys people like sexual abuse. So he's destroyed a lot of kids, and he should be in prison. So for that, I am grateful. Although he had rich and powerful cronies that helped him destroy a lot of kids, and I'd really like to see them go down too. I don't know if that's going to happen, but it would be wonderful if it did.
Well, do you have the infamous picture of Donald Trump naked, surrounded by 12-year-old girls?
I do not, no.
Bob, have you seen that picture?
No, I haven't. But it should be noted that here locally, alleged rape occurred at Wexner's mansion by Epstein in 1996. So when Wexner says he was totally unaware, the question is, if that occurred at your mansion, would you be totally unaware of it?
Oh, my God. This is really, you know.
Yes, that is that is something that rape did occur at Wexner. Jeffrey Epstein did rape a girl in Wexner's mansion. And so Wexner isn't the clean, squeaky billionaire that we thought, as I've said earlier in this interview. And hopefully we're going to get someone will lift the veil. The Department of Justice will start lifting the veil on Leslie Wexner, and we can see exactly what's going on there.
Well, Wexner did renounce Trump. So you would, at some point, so you would assume that Barr will probably not be unhappy to see Les Wexner's downfall. All right, you guys, thank you very much. Nick and Bob, an astounding hour, and we'll have to have you guys back to talk about it some more. It's been just a grotesque exploration at the Soul-topia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thank you both, and I wish you well.
Solartopia, don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Will we bid the